I'm here in my living room, peering through my mini blinds at a man who's sawing off something under my neighbor's car. Yep, this guy is stealing catalytic converters. And if you report thieves like him, you could get a reward up to $25,000. Just submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. That's H-E-A-T. The Virginia State Police HEAT Program. Reported. Rewarded.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Sam Madeira back here on the Dr. Madeira Show. And today we have a special guest, Dr. Patty Havey. How's it going today, Dr. Patty?
Just wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm excited to talk about male infertility with you and get all of your wisdom and knowledge here to be shared with everybody who's listening and tunes into the podcast. So for those of you who don't know Dr. Patty Havey, she is a results-obsessed naturopathic doctor in Arizona. She specializes in hormone optimization, fertility, and general wellness, and she is committed to root cause healing through therapeutic supplementation as well as targeted diet and lifestyle modifications. Her practice, Asotilo Integrative Medicine, provides integrative consultations worldwide via webcam for those looking to incorporate natural proactive approaches to their healthcare, which is spectacular. And if you all are not following her on Instagram, I highly recommend it. She does all of her own art and Instagram layout. It's beautiful. So you can follow her there at dr.patty, P-A-T-T-I underscore H-A-E-B-E. So check it out. How's it going down there in Arizona, and what's new with your life in the clinical realm of fertility?
It's going great here in Arizona. Weather's gorgeous, and I'm happy to be here talking about male fertility. It's an important topic, and I think we're just starting to kind of have the conversation these days. More information is kind of coming out about it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, and we were just chatting before we hit record here about all the toxins in the environment affecting male fertility, sperm health, et cetera. And I'm curious what you're seeing as far as how severe this issue is. I mean, is this something that is, I mean, oftentimes the conversation that we hear in medicine with fertility is, okay, let's get the female to make sure that she's fertile. And oftentimes male fertility is kind of like an afterthought.
Right, absolutely. And what I always say is, I mean, it's the egg and the sperm. I mean, that's legitimately 50%, 50%. So it is important that we're looking at all pieces of this puzzle. That being said, a woman's cycle and, you know, follicle formation is a little bit more complicated than, just sperm production. But research is coming out that's showing that a lot is passed on to the baby through sperm. So it's really important that we take kind of a proactive preconception approach to male fertility and male health. And also, we're seeing a huge decline in sperm concentration, volume, and count, which is crazy. There was a review done of actually more than 60 papers between the 40s and 1990. And I mean, sperm concentration has decreased from 113 million to 66 million. The volume has decreased from 3.4 mls to 2.75 mls on average. Wow. And then count has just diminished from 384.2 million to 181.5 million. That's like a 52.8% decrease over the course of 50 years. And that was to 1990. So like, we don't even know how that's progressed and continued into 2019.
Oh, wow. So it's about almost 30 years. We need an update on that. I don't know if everyone's going to do it, but basically things are not looking good from 1990, and there's even more toxins in the air, food, and water today than ever.
Exactly. And thankfully, sure. I think we're bringing awareness to it now. But I also feel that we're also, just because of convenience, exposed to so many more things than we were before. So, yeah, it's really interesting to see that intense decline. That being said, thankfully, you know, it only takes one sperm to do the job. But we do want to focus on the viability of those sperm and giving fertility the best chance.
Yes, excellent. Well, well said. And with male infertility, what are, you know, what are the typical analysis? Obviously, there's, you know, a sperm sample and then they analyze it in the lab. But, you know, what are the typical tests that a gentleman should have done if for preconception care?
Yeah, great question.
While their wife or significant other is looking at their end of things on their side of the street, what can guys look at for an
Yeah, there's a lot, actually. And it's actually interesting. Sometimes I'll see women and, you know, we're doing them, we're doing workups for unknown infertility. And, you know, they've been going through this for 3, 4, 5 years and no one's ever taken a peek at a semen analysis. So that is something that I always encourage. Whenever you're starting the process, you might as well just know where your baseline is at. I know semen analysis can be, you know, a little uncomfortable topic, but you're actually able to take the sample at your home, throw it in your waistband and bring it over to the lab within an hour and get it analyzed to take kind of the awkward piece out of it. So I do like to kind of tell people about that just so that it doesn't sound so scary and intimidating. But the sperm analysis, definitely, that's going to look at count, motility, and morphology. So that's like how many sperm are in there per milliliter, motility if they're swimming in circles or they're swimming straight, and then morphology is kind of what shape they're taking. Are they taking the right shape to swim straight up there? But other assessments that people can get is, you know, you want to maybe check in with a urologist and make sure everything anatomically is going well. We don't have anything like varicoceles, which cause decreased circulation to the testicles, and also making sure there's not a retrograde flow where actually the sperm is flowing backwards into the body instead of out. And again, that's, you know, that's sort of a further workup, but also looking at hormones is super important. And, you know, you work with men's hormones specifically, and having testosterone at that happy medium is really important. Making sure stress hormones aren't completely out of control is huge. If you really want to go down the rabbit hole, there's something called like a sperm chromatin assay, which checks for fragmentation of chromosomes and looks at DNA quality. So that's sort of a further down the line thing when people are having unexplained fertility. But and the one other thing is autoantibodies. Sometimes men have an autoimmune condition where they actually attack their own sperm, which is really interesting. So usually we start with a sperm analysis and hormones and then move forward from there.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a great synopsis. And oftentimes what I see is, like you said, the female partner is waiting a long time to get, you know, figure out what's going on and getting a lot of lab tests or working with practitioners and fertility center and maybe a naturopathic doctor too. And, you know, meanwhile, the guy has had no workup. So obviously that's why we're doing this episode. With men, what are some key nutritional and lifestyle things that they can start doing? Let's say that they are planning to have a child, you know, 3 to 6 months from now, or already trying, I don't really like that word. They're already planning, they're doing the things to, you know, they're having sex frequently, they have a healthy sex life, but it's just not happening. What would be some lifestyle things that men could look into to change that, you know, they don't even need to go to the doctor? They could just start changing after listening to today's podcast.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess basically just a good way to think about this in general for starters is, I mean, we're looking at about 3 months for sperm to completely form. I mean, they're really formed in a month and then they hang out in the epididymis for like 2 or 3 months. So really whatever you ate, drank, smoked, breathed, bathed in, cleaned with 3 months ago is going to affect your sperm today. So I think it's important to be mindful of preparing the body for that. And there's things you can do short term and long term. Of course, optimizing nutrients is so important. Really focusing on eating organic, keeping those pesticides to a minimum. Those studies show that those who ate organic showed 43% more sperm than those who did not. So food really is important in this piece, and really shying away from sugary processed foods that can bring in reactive oxidative species to the body and they do come down and affect sperm quality. In addition to that, though, obviously optimizing weight is super important. Obesity is a huge issue when it comes to fertility. Optimizing hormones. I mean, we could talk for a little while about decreasing and managing stress. Stress has a huge impact on sperm quality. So really learning how to manage that stress, and also, again, this is you and your hormone perspective, making sure we're addressing the adrenal glands and the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, and you know, making sure we don't have tons of cortisol floating around and insulin, you know, going crazy. Those are all super important components that all play a crucial role in male fertility.
Yeah, that's excellent. And you mentioned in one of your Instagram posts, I saw, I think it was this week, something about abstaining from alcohol for a certain time period. What was that time period roughly? Was it a month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months before?
So that particular study was actually on CNN, and it was looking at congenital heart defects in conjunction with men's consumption of alcohol. So I say, you know, making sure at least those 4 months before you're abstaining from alcohol is pretty important. That study may have said 6 months, don't quote me, but at least four for sure. Alcohol does have a huge impact, but also now that marijuana is being legalized, and I know that we love it and the endocannabinoid system is so fascinating and has so many benefits. However, when it comes to fertility, we see the THC constituent actually having a negative impact on fertility, especially male fertility. So I do always encourage, if people want babies, to make sure we kind of kick the marijuana habit until sort of after that. In addition, we don't know how it's going to affect fetuses long-term. Hopefully there'll be some positive stuff. As far as CBD goes, it looks promising. THC, it really does tend to impact sperm quality.
Yeah, I'm glad that you said that. It does seem like we have kind of gone to the other side of the pendulum with cannabis and recreational cannabis. And I actually used to work in the medical cannabis clinics for a while in between starting my private practice, Apollo Health Clinic here in Seattle, back in 2015. But what I saw is that, you know, we have these amazing extracts and high CBD and low THC. And, you know, now we have, with the Farm Bill passed in 2018, we can use plant-based CBD in very, very low, you know, 0.003 or 0.03% THC. So I think that would be a better option. Also, people can use other herbs to kind of tonify the endocannabinoid system, just as a side comment, you know, echinacea. So you can use echinacea to lower dosages long-term to kind of tune up the endocannabinoid system, and also do things like, you know, meditate or other things that are relaxing, exercise and things like that. So we don't always have to ingest cannabis to tune up the endocannabinoid system. And with THC, I mean, if somebody needs medical cannabis, then you want to kind of look at, like, what are your priorities and what are the other things that can be done maybe medicinally, so you're not scorching the sperm and you're able to have a child if that's really your motivation. And what I see, and I haven't worked with that many fertility couples over the years, and obviously this is your specialty, but what I see with fertility couples is that usually the motivation is through the roof to do whatever it takes to have a child. And
it's incredible.
There's a lot of stress and potentially, for lack of a better word, kind of anxiety and hyper-diligence around, okay, how are we going to have a baby? You know, our family's pressuring us to have a baby. We've been together for X amount of years. All of our friends have babies, you know, especially for the first child. And what I see is that that kind of hyperdiligence actually is part of the issue of why they're unable to have a child. Kind of like playing into that mental stress. You know, they already have the stress of their job, their commute, you know, their social life, their family expectations around this issue. This, you know, not an issue, but this major life goal and milestone. And there's kind of a lot wrapped up in that. And, you know, some people could argue biologically, this is why we're here, you know, to procreate. That's the main reason why we're here as a species. And everything else is around, built around that survival and, you know, hunter gatherer. Now we're going to work and working hard, and that's, you know, playing, that all plays into it. So I'm curious what you offer or what you counsel your clients on and patients on and couples around how to manage this kind of societal stress around, you know, conceiving a child, planning a pregnancy, meeting, you know, their internal expectations, their cultural expectations. Cause I mean, in some cultures it's like, okay, why don't you have three kids by age 25, you know, or 30, you know? So I'm curious what you have to say to that.
Yeah. And I think the hard thing too, for those, you know, listening that are not actively trying to conceive, is you don't really realize until you start trying and it becomes unsuccessful, how once you make that decision to start trying, it's very frustrating very quickly to not have that kind of immediate pregnancy take place. And I think that's kind of something mentally, you know, people were so focused on pregnancy prevention, and then all of a sudden, you know, and people are on birth control for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and then they come and they're like, hey, I'm ready to have a baby, let's go. And they just expect it to happen super easily. And it honestly doesn't. I mean, even if when we look at females at their peak of fertility at age 25 is like the creme de la creme spot for conception, you still only have, if everything's perfect, a 20% chance of a pregnancy occurring per cycle, per month, which is really kind of tiny. And then that goes up as, you know, when we get to 35, you're only looking at like 7%. So it's important to understand that it truly is a miracle, and to not downsize that. A lot of things have to go right in order for that pregnancy to take place. And I think you have to approach that with a healthy respect.
I'm on a city street in Virginia, standing in an empty parking space where just last night, Bob's car was stolen. Did you see Bob's car get stolen? Probably not. But do you know who's been stealing cars in Virginia? You could get a reward of up to $25,000. Submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. The HEAT program from the Virginia State Police. Reported. Rewarded.
I'm here in my living room peering through my mini blinds at a man who's sawing off something under my neighbor's car. Yep, this guy is stealing catalytic converters. And if you report thieves like him, you could get a reward up to $25,000. Just submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. That's H-E-A-T. The Virginia State Police HEAT Program. Reported. Rewarded.
And a healthy bit of patience. Because again, with that statistic, I mean, if all systems are go, everything's looking beautiful, I mean, what's 20% into 100, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10? I mean, that's at least 4 months, you know, you should get pregnant in that time. But usually, on average, at peak of fertility, you're looking at 3 to 6 months if all things are going well. Now, if we have problems, we're not ovulating, the sperm quality is not good, then it's going to take a little longer. So my biggest thing is really kind of helping people to pay attention to this beforehand and take the time to prepare their bodies for pregnancy 3, 4, 6, 8 months before they're ready to begin trying. Even if they're still taking, you know, using contraception, there's still so much you can do to get your body kind of in the zone, decrease your stress levels. Also, you know, like what you were just asking me, it's so important to go into the conception process with kind of stress coping capabilities and mindfulness and meditation skills, because it gets even more stressful when you're pregnant because you're trying to figure out the finances, you're worried about the health of the baby. Then the baby comes and it's a whole other level of stress. So there's so many layers of really kind of working on yourself before you even begin that conception process, which is really interesting. And I'm kind of trying to bring more awareness just to that mindfulness component that goes through kind of, I guess, ahead of the time of this whole process.
Well said. Yeah. Thanks for saying that. Cause I mean, not to be harsh, but I'm going to try to say this without being harsh, because I'm trying to be a little bit softer. Now I'm on the West Coast for 14
years. Let it rip.
On the East Coast. But essentially, the way I think about it is, you know, having a child is our nature, you know, and nature doesn't have to try to be and do the things that it does. You know, leaves fall off the trees in the fall, you know, water falls from with gravity down a cliff to make a waterfall. Like, nature doesn't think, how am I going to do all these things that I do, and get all anxious and pent up and hyper vigilant about how it's going to do what it does, right? Mm-hmm. So if this is our nature biologically, and everything that we've already said, and even, you know, at 20% chance of roll the dice, to make that even more of a probability, you know, if we're talking about, okay, the probability of this happening, a child or like a baby or the fertility process and pregnancy happening and occurring, typically child doesn't, you know, these things don't want to happen when we're in the stress response of running from the bear, and we're not in that kind of rest and digest, and we barely have a libido. You know, some mm-hmm. clients I've worked with, you know, I ask them questions like, well, how many times a week are you having sex? And they look at me blankly and say, oh, no, we're not. You know, well, how are you going to have a child if you're not having sex at right. least during, you know, every day or during ovulation mm-hmm. time period, you know, 3 to 4 days before and after ovulation? You can speak to that in more detail than I can. But, you know, these are kind of the basic prerequisites. And then not to push the issue, but to push the issue, why would a child want to, you know, start growing, or a fetus want to start growing in a environment that is so stressful, you know, that the family isn't really, you know, the couple's just working all the time. They're not spending any time together. And there's not really a sense of like a container or a nest, a safe place. And, you know, when I say safe, I mean stress, right? So stress is like every day we have this modern stress of go, 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 perform, get it done. Everything is urgent. The text messages, the emails, 24/7, we're all available and expected to respond to everything immediately and be completely accountable and available all the time to our boss, to our family, everything. And that's all good. But when do we say, okay, enough's enough. I need to give myself some downtime so that I can be available to, you know, this new lifestyle. Because like you said, when the baby comes, well, then your whole time period is, okay, what does the baby need? You know, and the ability to respond without having this kind of anxiety or pent up stress all the time to the baby's needs is going to help that child develop and be able to self-soothe and be have the appropriate healthy attachment, if you go into like attachment psychology theories and stuff like that. So obviously, you know, this is beyond fertility, but the point being, from a hormonal point of view, if we just go to back to basics of basic physiology, stress, running from the bear, fight or flight versus rest and digest, you know, waking up in the morning, having a healthy appetite, having a strong libido, not having to use an alarm every morning, you know, sleeping well through the night, all those things. When those things are all kind of in line, then it's going to be a lot easier to, you know, have a libido and have a healthy sex life, which are all prerequisites for, you know, conceiving a child. So, you know,
absolutely.
If listening to this and you're only having sex once a month, you know, maybe start working there, like you're saying, and on all the other foundational things of okay, well, what's your nutritional status? You know, or how are you sleeping? Why aren't you sleeping well? Why aren't you able to stay asleep or sleep through the night? You know, what's going on in your job or home life that is keeping these things to fall into line for you? And then addressing them, whether it's with, you know, a couples therapist or figuring out if you need a career change. Because like you said, it's like you're setting up this nest, if you will, the safe place for the child to, you know, grow in the womb and then grow, you know, into a human, full-grown human eventually in your home. So
they become adults someday.
Yeah. So what are you going to teach that child if that child comes into a place where it's kind of like, well, we're workaholics. All we do is work and we don't really pay attention to each other. And, you know, that's kind of what our culture rewards is this hyper performance. We're going to just push the envelope. We're not going to take care of ourselves because we're not rewarded for that. We'll just take medications and keep going. No big deal. You know, everything's normal because your MD said so, even though they're using labs that are 50 to 70 years outdated. And, you know, I'm fine until I have a heart attack. So
until something goes wrong, everything's okay.
Until the wheels fall off the bus. So, or, you know, we're driving with flat tire and the oil's leaking out of the engine, but let's keep going and just see where this goes because, you know, we got to all make a living and, you know, make our boss happy and make the company we work happy. So
definitely. Well, and something you said that really resonated with something that I had heard the other day, you sort of, you know, mentioned nature and the timing and, you know, the world doesn't stress about deadlines and time. They do things when it's right. I heard a midwife the other day refer to the term horticultural time when we're looking at reproductive health. And that really resonated with me, especially like when we're looking at due dates, you know, due dates, for example, you find out the date and that's the day the baby is supposed to come on. And then there's all this stress if they come earlier, they come later. And you have to look at the entire conception process as horticultural time, right? If we go and plant a bunch of seeds outside at the same time on the same date, are they all going to grow at the same rate and blossom at the same time? Absolutely not. So I think that's something that's just kind of cool to keep in mind about, I mean, your nature is going to take its course, but it's not a perfect timeline and it might not fit yours perfectly.
Well said. Yeah, totally. I really like that approach too, where it's, you know, things happen at a specific time for, you know, because things align, especially like you're saying, if it's 20% chance, and then we have all these kind of, as in naturopathic medicine, we talk about like obstacles to cure, obstacles to pregnancy occurring in this situation, you know, the opportunity and the chance being 20% chance if things are all aligned correctly seems like it would be far less given all the stats you read off in the beginning of today's talk from the 1990s of, you know, sperm being a 52% deficit in 50 years. So, you know, I've heard case reports of men who are 30 or 35 with zero sperm count. And that was about 10 years ago. So it's, you know, it does matter what we eat. And unfortunately, men have been conditioned. Us men have been conditioned to not really care about our health for the most part, unless it's, you know, physical health, like activity or muscle health or sports. And for the most part, you know, what I've experienced as a guy and, you know, fortunately or unfortunately for me, my health conditions forced me to see a naturopathic doctor 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I had to start paying attention because I wasn't paying attention. And so those symptoms get very loud for you, you know, and if you listen, you can prevent, you know, chronic conditions. But with autoimmunity on the rise, and then you mentioned that you can have autoimmune condition where your own immune system as a guy is attacking your sperm, you know, that's concerning. And I'm finding a lot of men who have low libido, erectile dysfunction, who are less than age 45, less than age 40, who have Hashimoto's thyroiditis, who, you know, thought, oh, maybe it's testosterone. Their testosterone's okay. You know, it's fine, actually. It's great. But they have an autoimmune disease. And once you have one autoimmune disease, your chance of getting another goes up at least 50%. So for guys listening to this, if you're not getting your antibodies tested for different autoimmune conditions, it's not just for females, you know, like the textbooks say, where Hashimoto's and Graves and a lot of rheumatoid arthritis, these are statistically, if you look up on the CDC's website or any autoimmune website, NIH, et cetera, they'll say, you know, this is mostly a female condition. However, what we're seeing clinically is that that's not the case anymore. And that's going to affect fertility, because if your immune system's all whacked out, you know, it's going to push your endocrine system, and then you're not going to have enough FSH or testosterone to eventually to make sperm, you know?
Right.
So.
Exactly. Well, and you may see this as well, hugely. And I think it's actually more often that is, you know, people neglecting all different hormones, but also men that are exogenously supplementing tons of testosterone, they're also shutting down sperm production because the brain stops talking to the testicles because you're getting that too much synthetic, you know, testosterone in your body. So it's like finding that happy medium. I actually have had several clients who did not know that their husbands were using testosterone replacement therapy, and it did become problematic in their sperm counts were like nothing. So
yep.
It's just kind of interesting how that pendulum swings. But yeah, I think that I find a lot of men just don't really feel that they matter. I don't know that they feel, I mean, I have a list of statistics here, you know, how impactful environmental toxins are with male fertility. I mean, we're looking at BPA, DS exposure, phthalates, pesticides. I mean, the evidence is there, and not only the sperm quality is it affecting, but also the conditions such as like ADHD that it's increasing in children. I mean, and that comes back to the talk of kind of epigenetics, and you know, it starts with just one cell, but holy cow, you know, that DNA is very important, and what's turned on and turned off in that DNA is absolutely essential. The mitochondria there are super essential. So it's kind of amazing how it all does play together and how important dads are.
Yeah. Sorry, how important what?
Well, just, so we were talking stress earlier, and I know, I feel like we covered it really thoroughly from, you know, kind of like a basic perspective, but for anybody that needs like further convincing, when we're stressed, right, we secrete glucocorticoids. But glucocorticoids affect the testicles. So you're going to see reduced gonadotropin-releasing hormone. You're going to see decreased luteinizing hormone and follicle-stimulating hormone. These are what actually make the body create sperm. Directly, glucocorticoids actually promote apoptosis of sperm and thusly affect spermatogenesis. So like you being stressed legitimately has a direct like missile effect on sperm production. They're very, very, your Leydig cells in your male reproductive organs are very sensitive to stress. And also if that doesn't get your attention, I mean, Leydig cells are stimulated by a luteinizing hormone. That's what produces your testosterone. So if you don't care about fertility, like at least care about where your testosterone levels are at, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, usually what I say to all patients is, you know, a healthy person is a fertile person. So even if somebody's like, well, I never want to have kids, mm-hmm. and they've just determined this, and you know, a female or a male, like you said, well, at least be cognizant and be aware and care about where your hormone levels are at so you can be the healthiest person. So, you know, maybe you're listening to this or maybe you don't want to have kids and you're listening to this for a family member. Just be aware that, like you said, luteinizing hormone from the anterior pituitary gland is stimulating the Leydig cells and the testes to make testosterone, FSH stimulating to make sperm production. So if things are off, then you want to look at, well, why are they off? And, you know, you're talking about stress decreasing sperm quality and counts. And also, you know, stress can just plummet your testosterone significantly. So look at that as, okay, well, this is a sign that things need to be improved. What can I do? Also, I wanted to kind of circle back. You said a bunch of great things a little bit ago. And one thing that stuck out to me is you said, well, men feel like they don't matter. And do you mean that in the context of fertility in a relationship where the female's health is seen as, you know, 99% of the equation and the guy's fertile health is seen as 1% typically in the kind of
Exactly. You know, they're like, it's her responsibility, or, you know, something mm-hmm. wrong with her. It couldn't be me or what I do. And one little sperm isn't going to affect everything. Like, she's growing the baby.
Right. Interesting. So it sounds like there's a mismatch in understanding of human biology with conception there.
Right. Exactly. It's just interesting. And I shouldn't put a blanket term on that, because that's not every man. Right. But I would say more often than not, I have a female sitting in front of me. Now and then husbands come on calls with me, which is really nice, because it's nice to see couples do that together, because they're going to be parenting together as well. And he'll be supporting her through the pregnancy. So it's a good foundation for your relationship.
I'm on a city street in Virginia, standing in an empty parking space where just last night, Bob's car was stolen. Did you see Bob's car get stolen? Probably not. But do you know who's been stealing cars in Virginia? You could get a reward of up to $25,000. Submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. The HEAT program from the Virginia State Police. Reported. Rewarded.
Michael J. for Hope for the Warriors. Started back in 06 at Camp Lejeune, military families witnessing the effects of war on their loved ones. Now, almost 20 years later, they've aided over 53,000 service members, veterans, and families with confidential, high-quality behavioral health care services at little or no cost to post-9/11 vets and their families. Over 91% of every dollar donated goes directly to the programs. If you're as concerned about our heroes as I am, go to hopeforthewarriors.org.
I think for the preconception process to start together. But I just would say more often than not, I do find women more concerned about themselves and, you know, men really taking the backseat about it.
Yeah, that really lines up with the statistics where men typically don't go to the doctor, and, you know, they're not going to think anything of the Rockstar energy drinks they're drinking every morning, or the 8 cups of coffee. Or the other things they're doing, like drinking lots of beer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do have a men's only Facebook group called Live Strong, if anybody's on Facebook and interested. No females. We had some people try to invite some females and some, like, grandmas in there, and I had to get them out. Sorry. Not sorry. But yeah, it's men only. And oftentimes some of the things that I'm mentioning are things that you're talking about, like, you know, take 2 months off a year from drinking alcohol. Mm-hmm. Look at your sleep, you know, improve your sleep so that you're making enough testosterone. We have a lot of evidence today that most adults, male and females, are getting less than 7 hours of sleep, and some less than 6 hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. The average a couple of years ago was 6 hours of sleep a night for Americans, people from the US. And what we're seeing is that less than 7 hours of sleep significantly drops testosterone almost 6 nanograms per deciliter per night, which is more of a drop of testosterone per year. So a lot of the times the myth is that, oh, well, as you age, you drop a lot of testosterone. Is actually more sleep is going to, lack of sleep is going to affect your testosterone more quickly and more severely than, you know, becoming a year older or 5 years older. So
yeah. It's or huge. 10 years sleep older is such key medicine. And that's always like my first prescription for all, you know, female couples. And I have a Fertility Foundations online course that couples are kind of supposed to do together. Nice. Just because I feel that ends up being more approachable. But it has, you know, suggestions for females, but also suggestions for males. They do a detoxification together. They clean up their environment together. The sleep recommendations are the same, because it matters that they both feel good. Yeah, sleep can't be understated. It's huge.
Yeah, I mean, sleep, I think sleep is king. I personally have struggled with sleep on and off probably since I was 12 or 13. One thing that I do notice when guys go on bioidentical low-dose testosterone therapy is some of them have a hard time sleeping at night because of how testosterone integrates or inputs into their brain and nervous system. Mm-hmm. And in that case, you know, we can look at progesterone levels for guys and women, but
I love progesterone in men.
Sleep is so big. And there's a great book called Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker, PhD, used to be at Harvard, now at Berkeley. I've been plugging this all over the place, and I'm not making money off of the book, but the book will blow your mind. I mean, less than 7 hours of sleep, decrease in muscle mass and gonad mass. So if we're talking about staying fertile and having optimal testosterone and sperm, you know, we're seeing a testicular shrinkage and muscle atrophy from lack of sleep. Mm-hmm. So whereas, you know, people may not be working out, so they may not have an increase in muscle mass or toned muscles, so they may not even notice that, hey, you actually don't have that much muscle mass to begin with, so you're not even really noticing this.
Right.
Which is kind of a hard truth to realize. You know, guys don't like to be told, hey, your balls are shrinking and your muscles are shrinking because you are just doing something that you shouldn't be doing and not sleeping. You know, we can always work more, but there's only so many hours in the day, and I'm guilty of that too. But eventually we got to just go the hell to sleep. So, so getting back to some of these things that people could do and maybe where these chemicals can be found so that the gentlemen listening and the wives listening can kind of pinpoint, okay, what are the things that we need to get out of our diet, out of our kitchen, out of our, you know, beverage choices, and where are the substitutes?
Yeah. When I work with couples, like, I think one of the biggest things is, I mean, we do a detox, but we also really focus on cleaning up their environment. Like, I give them a whole list of like chemicals to avoid, things to look for, and like swaps for them, because that's, you know, the hardest thing is you're like, well, holy cow, I'm doing everything wrong. And, you know, the one thing that I will say, like, before we start with this is it's little changes over time. You know, you can drive yourself crazy just, you know, when you bring awareness to it, all of a sudden you're feel like you're living in the biggest toxic bubble, but it's these little, you know, adding a water filter, switching out containers. I mean, those make a big difference. So like the first one is BPA. Obviously we talk about that a lot, but also what a lot of people don't know is, you know, they think they're safe because they're using BPA free products. Well, those have, you know, we always say, if it looks like a duck, talks like a duck, sounds like a duck, it's probably a duck. If things are acting the way that a BPA plastic acts, it probably, we just don't have research yet showing the negative side effects of it. So really focusing on using glass containers and just getting rid of all plastics in general is super important. Let's see, what else? Phthalates, really paying attention to like what lotions, creams, body washes, deodorant in men is huge. Making sure that we're keeping those out and keeping them super clean. Actually, one study found that paternal phthalate exposure was associated with lower birth rate.
Wow.
Birth weight, which is really crazy. So obviously the association was stronger in that study when they added in maternal prenatal levels of phthalates. But I mean, there was legitimately a statistical significance of men just using those phthalates. So while it sounds just hoo-ha in one sperm, I mean, the studies are there that show this.
So dudes matter. Guys, your sperm matters in the equation.
Yeah, you do matter.
So you can't just hang out eating chips and beer and pizza on the couch and just kind of like wait for her to, you know, get her fertility tuned up and then do the act and call it good.
So. And this is something that I really like too, is, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, you know, it's just in the US or it's just another country. I mean, so pesticide exposure, for example, I mean, that directly can damage sertoli and or Leydig cell function. And also we already know that it disrupts endocrine pathways. And this studies have shown that this lowers sperm count, but studies have been shown in the United States, in Japan, and in Peru. I mean, those are three very different places that are all showing the same effects in male fertility. So it's not completely isolated, which I think is important for people to understand. Even like air pollution, air quality is super important. Getting a good air purifier on board. Our indoor air ends up being more toxic than our outdoor air a lot of the times. And I mean, there's even a study from the Czech Republic, three studies that show decreased sperm count, abnormal morphology, and lowered motility, all due to air quality.
Yikes. Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I don't know much about the Czech Republic, but I'm pretty sure we have much larger cities than the biggest city in the Czech Republic. And,
yeah,
you know, like I think you're in Phoenix, right? Yeah. LA, Phoenix, Seattle, if it's not raining, we have pretty bad air quality here with smog. You can see it in the skyline.
Yeah, I remember when I lived in Denver, you would literally see this like brown cloud that would just like form over the city on like really hot days during the summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's nuts. But then, I mean, and that being said, our, you know, our outdoor air is bad, but then also our indoor air quality is so crummy. Like you don't realize how many flame retardants and, you know, formaldehyde is are off gassing from your IKEA furniture. And I mean, which, you know, is not avoidable all the time. So having a good, you know, air purifier on board is super important. But it's also little things like sunscreen. With ingredients like something called benzophone, those have estrogen activity and anti-androgenic activity. So those are actually associated with decreased rates in getting pregnant as well. So, you know,
we shouldn't use the spray-on one that you can buy at Walgreens or wherever, Walmart.
Yep. When I say loose sunscreen, I mean, I understand there's a time and a place. If you're floating down the river, you need that good sunscreen that's going to stay on. But let's keep that to maybe just like minimized exposure one or two times a year and focus on using clean sunscreens. Every other day throughout that year. Also mobile phones like EMF, keeping laptops off men's laps and keeping phones out of front pockets and moving their location, I think is really important. Small studies are like just starting to come out that are showing decreased motility, increased reactive oxidative species and decreased morphology all just by that EMF exposure. So I know no one wants to hear that piece of it, but I do encourage males to keep those phones out of their pocket and up on their desk or on the counter away from them as often as possible.
Excellent point. Yeah, it does seem like men need maybe a bag or a satchel, a male purse.
Yeah, a little European shoulder bag. Why not?
Yeah, just keep it, you know, put it on airplane mode if you're, you know, don't need to be interactive with your phone for a little bit. Or I like the idea of like leave your phone at home one day a week or something. I know that can be anxiety producing for a lot of people, but you know, we did it
at one time.
Mobile phones, right?
Yes. So. No, it's really interesting. Okay. And then here's one other interesting thing for your community that I thought is, you know, I think one kind of misconception about male fertility is that males are going to be fertile forever. You know, they have sperm forever and it doesn't really matter. They can get around to having babies when they're getting around to having babies. But studies are actually showing that when you get to like 45 years old, there's actually a 2x incidence of DNA fragmentation rates than when men were at 30 years old. And this is associated with increased miscarriage rates. So
interesting.
It just kind of, it's not, men can absolutely, they do have a longer vitality cycle than women do as far as reproductive years, but your quality is still diminishing. Females, you know, quality is absolutely diminishing as they age. But it is a component for men. And studies really have shown above the age of 45, you're looking at increased rates of ADHD, increased rates of autism, increased like bipolar disorder as well. That being said, you know, when we get up to 45, you know, or 40s, just like with women, there's a lot we can do with diet, lifestyle, antioxidants to improve that sperm quality. It's just important, I think, that you're aware of it and you kind of take some action on it because, you know, you're not invincible.
Yeah, that's a hard pill to swallow. Our mortality of our sperm and ourselves, I mean, really.
Right.
And with that statistic and knowledge for men, there's a lot of prenatal multivitamins for women out there. And, you know, always saying, you know, check for methylated folate and MTHFR and stuff like that for female reproductive health and iron and things, you know, a lot of these things are said, and there's a lot of blogs and stuff on social media. What about for men? I mean, what are some key nutrients for sperm health? And if you were to kind of build maybe 1 to 5 maybe nutrients that you would say are key for male fertility health, what would you?
Great question. Fish oil, hugely important. Getting in like 2 grams of it a day, actually. Mm-hmm. Super, super important for decreasing inflammation. But also zinc is huge for sperm quality. Selenium is super important. Obviously, A, C, and E are going to give us our antioxidants. Antioxidants are really important for protecting our sperm quality. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites in male fertility is CoQ10. I know that we always think of it with the heart. Our heart is our powerhouse of the body. It has so many mitochondria per square foot, essentially. But sperm are super important, right? Because mitochondria is where they get their energy from to swim. So they need to have as much effective mitochondria as possible. So CoQ10 is huge. And then also like acetyl L-carnitine and L-carnitine, huge in male fertility. And then if we had to pick a favorite herb, obviously withania is huge in male fertility as well.
Oh yes, ashwagandha, yeah, withania somnifera. Yeah, that's it's a favorite herb of mine.
It's just so good, and it's fun to say ashwagandha. Yes. Who doesn't want that?
Yeah. I mean, for guys listening, if you don't know about ashwagandha, it's been used in Ayurvedic medicine, which is the natural medicine system of India that's been around for at least 4,000 years that we have records of. And, you know, kind of similar to Chinese medicine in China, they have used a lot of botanical medicine and nutritional medicine in their own system that they have created, and it's very effective. So ashwagandha has typically been used as in Ayurvedic medicine. They call it a rasayana herb, which means that it's a tonic herb. And unlike other herbs, you don't have to mix it with other herbs in a formulation. It can do a lot of things by itself. And one of those main things, besides increasing testosterone, strength, endurance, and helping with adrenal and thyroid health, is testosterone and fertility. So something to look at, and always make sure you're getting the root, because they're using the leaf and mixing the leaf in with the root and basically making cheaper ashwagandha extracts out there so they can make more money. But the leaf does not have enough constituents. So
I'm so glad you mentioned that too, because I do see a lot of people that come to see me and they're like, you know, I've already been taking, you know, all these fertility supplements, which is really cool, but they have like really wimpy doses of herbs and nutrients, and you do need like therapeutic levels in order to get the benefit. So I think sometimes integrative and natural medicines get a bad rap, but it's because people aren't using therapeutic dosages to get where they need to be, which is why working with an expert is really kind of, it's very important and essential when you're really looking for targeted results.
Yes, exactly. I mean, if you're right herb, right person, right dose, right route, you know, all of these, the five rights of all prescription medications and natural medicines all play in. So right time of day. So if you're taking the herb that you want to have improve your testosterone and your adrenal health before bed, then, you know, it's probably not going to be as effective, although you can take ashwagandha before bed on like some other kind of adrenal tonic, adaptogenic herbs, as we call them, that help us kind of adapt to stress and stressors in life. But yeah, the other herbs, while we're on the topic, that come to mind for male fertility would be tribulus. And you want to make sure that you're getting tribulus from Eastern Europe and that it's the highest potency and extracts. And also want to make sure you're getting it from a high quality herbal medicine company. Two that I like are Gaia Herbs and Mediherbs out of Australia. So those are the two that I usually stick to with my patients, because, you know, you're going to spend money out of pocket. Why waste your money on garbage? You might as well just buy better groceries and healthier organic food and not take that garbage and crap that people are buying on the internet and Amazon, et cetera, that is, you don't even know what's in there. So we have ashwagandha, tribulus. Also, another one that comes to mind is maca. Maca is kind of suspect today because I did find out that China.
Michael J. for Hope for the Warriors. Started back in 06 at Camp Lejeune. Military families witnessing the effects of war on their loved ones. Now, almost 20 years later, they've aided over 53,000 service members, veterans, and families with confidential, high-quality behavioral health care services at little or no cost to post-9/11 vets and their families. Over 91% of every dollar donated goes directly to the programs. If you're as concerned about our heroes as I am, go to hopeforthewarriors.org.
China and its economic brilliance has had people go to Peru in the high elevation mountains where maca grows as like a tuber above, you know, around 7,000 plus feet up in the Andes. And they've taken the phenotypes and then taken them back to China and grown them in a lab. So not only is that heartbreaking because that's how these maca farmers make their money, but they essentially stole the maca, and now we don't really know the quality of it, and they're selling it on the market, and a bunch of companies are buying it from these Chinese companies. And anything that grows in China is suspect because of how the chemicals are so dense with their industrial revolution that's just finished. So any Chinese herbs you're getting, any herbs from China, like ginseng, et cetera, are all suspect. So, you know, quality. You want to make sure it's the right herb, free of toxins and contaminants and adulteration. The other, so if you are getting a good maca, you know, Gaia herbs potentially could be a good one. And they have a powder, so you can mix that in your morning protein shake. So men and women, maca can be helpful. Just be mindful that if you overdo it on maca, you might start feeling a little overstimulated. So back off. So we got tribulus, maca, ashwagandha. Some others that could be really beneficial would be like Korean ginseng, Eleutherococcus, which is Siberian ginseng, grows in Siberia. So those are some herbs to look into. Obviously, lifestyle is the foundation, so sleep, exercise, diet. And, you know, not like completely overheating your testicles, you know, with tight underwear.
Hot tubs, on your Epsom salt baths.
Epsom salt baths. Just, you know, if you're scheduling the time that you want to conceive your child, then, you know, don't have a hot Epsom salt bath and then wonder why things aren't working.
Yeah. Right. That's why I always say, like, let's do the detox 4 months ahead of time so you have time to detox effectively as you'd like to, like, use all our detoxification pathways, really utilize those. But then let everything be able to recover and be in a happy place beforehand. Also, one other really interesting thing in male fertility that I think is important for men to be aware of is like just common medications that can significantly impact male fertility to be aware of. It's going to be like nicotine, calcium channel blockers, MAOIs, cocaine. Also, like antidepressants, asthma medications, autoimmune prescriptions, they all can kind of affect sperm quality. So if you're on, you know, a significant list of prescription drugs, it's also important to kind of get to the root of what's causing that, heal that up, to kind of maximize your chances as well. I think that's a little lesser known issue.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that. Cause I mean, the average adult over age 50, I think, is on at least 4 to 8 medications now. So,
right.
I mean, they may not be trying to have a child. However, I've had patients that are having kids at, you know, 52. Mm-hmm. So,
which, no, it's not uncommon at all.
Yeah.
One thing that you did mention earlier, that you've heard from, you know, as there's kind of pressure to perform or timing is difficult. And there's a new product out that I think is really cool. It's called the Mosey Baby Insemination Syringe. And it's not like an at-home IUI or by any means. What it is it's just a basically feminine-friendly engineered syringe in which the male is able to ejaculate on his own time into like kind of this well-designed cup that's going to contain everything well. Makes it really easy for you to pull up into this blunt-tipped syringe, and it literally gets every single drop out of it. The women can basically insert it within an hour, and it's actually mimics the laminar flow. It has the same opening as that at the end of a penis, and it mimics the same semen flow as would occur naturally, but it's again getting, you know, diminishes performance anxiety and pressure to perform, timing issues, and also gets sperm as close to the cervix as possible, so it has less distance to travel, which I think is just really cool. And I just like busy couples to know about like tools that exist that can just make the process a little maybe less stressful for them. And I think that's just kind of a cool one.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think just taking the stress out of this whole process altogether, and, you know, whatever tools you can use like that. I mean, I have friends and, you know, colleagues where their work schedules are completely opposite, where maybe one person works a night shift and, you know, the wife works a day shift or vice versa. And literally they only see each other for maybe an hour, half an hour a day. And the weekend. They're trying to get back on schedule with each other. So things like that can be really useful because we live in this modern world where, you know, we're all trying to survive and do the best we can with our health. But we got to show up to work, and not everything's 100% ideal, like a utopian world. So that's great.
And our eggs don't wait to ovulate for the weekends, unfortunately.
Right. Just put that on hold. I'll be there on the weekend.
Nope. Right.
That's great. Nobody's waiting for you guys. Mm-hmm. That's funny. Yeah. So with going back to what you said about timing and age and everything, I mean, we've seen in the press and, you know, famous people having children over, you know, women over age 40 and men over age 40 or 50. What would kind of be like that? I don't want to kind of isolate a specific age, but maybe ideal age range.
Sweet spot.
Yeah, the sweet spot. Like, is it like 20 to 40 or for men and women? What are we looking at if a gentleman is like, oh, I'm just going to work hard in my life right now and then, you know, get married and then have kids later when I have all my ducks in a row? How far can they push that back? You said 45, yeah. But...
Yep, 45 is when we started seeing that. I think, I mean, in a perfect world, before 35 is kind of where we see the decline start to begin. So I would say it's worth keeping in mind. That being said, life is important and it happens. And that's why I do like to emphasize the piece of if you do choose to have children later on in life, which is not a problem, it's just very important for you that you're focusing on your sperm and egg quality through that entire time before that and really making sure that you have a good diet, a healthy lifestyle, and that you're really focusing on your antioxidants and nutrients that entire time to make sure that your sperm is going to be optimized, you know, whenever you're ready to do that. So it's kind of, you know, obviously ideal is going to be 35, but if you're completely unhealthy, then that's not going to be, you know, a great age for you either. So it's really all about health and preparing and just really making sure that we're really protecting those special eggs and sperm.
Excellent. Yeah. Great point. I mean, to take care of ourselves now, so that later we can be healthy. I mean, even for the people that, you know, maybe they change their mind and like, hey, you know, we have more financial freedom.
Yeah.
Their mind. Well, we don't want to have kids. We're going to travel or something. Well, if you have to be healthy enough to travel, you know,
big time.
And
to go along with that, something that I should have mentioned is, you know, a lot of people, I mean, we're so lucky that we have IVF and ICSI and even, you know, IUI as well is great. But those are very expensive. Not that they're not an option. They're wonderful. But also, even if you're doing IVF, you still want a good quality egg and a good quality sperm and a very healthy endometrium for that egg to implant into, a healthy body habitus for that baby to grow in. So even if, you know, you're planning on having kids later and you're like, oh, I'll just freeze my eggs, do whatever I want, and then, you know, get IVF down the road, It still matters, you know, your health is still so important then. So I do like to say that caveat, and I actually work with a lot of people who are getting ready to do IVF and IUI because they want to make sure that their eggs and their sperm are top notch before they pay all this money to do these therapies, or maybe they've done the therapies and they haven't worked. And so there's a lot integrative from an integrative perspective that they can't do allopathically that we can do to improve that egg and sperm quality.
Excellent points. Yeah. I mean, looking at, it's not one way is better than the other. It's, you know, how can we optimize everything using all the tools that we have in medicine across the board? And, you know, you're mentioning a lot, okay, let's, you know, at least 4 months or a year out already start living a healthy lifestyle and, you know, planning for that conception time period where, you know, you want to have a child. It kind of brings up an almost cliche, I think it's like a Chinese proverb, you know, the best time to plant a tree was yesterday. So let's get on it. And
I love that.
I think a lot of guys out there are just kind of like, okay, well, you know, I exercise or I do these things and you know, like you said, if nicotine's on board, if these other chemicals and plastics and things like that. And when we go out to eat, even at some of the nicest restaurants, they use oils that are stored in plastic, you know, and these crappy vegetable oils that are just garbage and all the other things you already mentioned. So all of that's brilliant. I really hope people are paying attention because, you know, all of these things matter. Men's health matters, which is my mission in life, to get guys to kind of step up to the plate and say, okay, like, I'm excelling in my career. Now let's excel in my health and my career. And that makes you a more attractive partner to your wife or girlfriend, or if you're single, to a prospective partner or significant other. So whereas I think it's easy to kind of be selfish, for lack of a better word, and just say, well, I'm going to just do what I want. And then if this happens, it happens. If it doesn't, then, you know, it's not my fault. And there's no shame in kind of naming the things that we all need to change. You know, we're all on this kind of continuum of reaching for optimal health. And hopefully that's you if you're listening. Otherwise, you know, hopefully you're on board soon on that train to say, okay, I'm going to do my best and I'm still working on these things, you know, but, being aware enough to say, okay, well, I've been smoking cigarettes for 20 years. I want to have a child. How can I change this behavior so that I can be healthier? So I'm not just blaming or putting all the weight on my significant other, my wife, to say, okay, well, you know, it's all about you and your fertility. And, you know, let's flip the switch on that and say it's about us, you know?
Yep.
So taking mutual reciprocated responsibility is going to go a long way in any relationship. But yeah, so excellent points. What are some resources that people can look up online to kind of dive in deeper for those that are really interested and excited about this topic?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's not a ton out there. It's growing. I post a lot about those pieces. And I would say, I mean, I think a good resource is my Fertility Foundations course, just to really give you a game plan and the steps to take. I think you can read a lot of information online, but it's hard to figure out how to put it together and translate it to you. So kind of my methods and regimens are well researched and there's evidence behind them, and gives you kind of just a clear path into what you and your partner need to be working on in order to be prepared for that pregnancy, whether it's 4 months away or whether it's a year or two away.
Excellent. Great. And the link for those who are listening is fertilityfoundations.teachable.com/p/fertilityfoundations. So
yeah, and they can, I have a link in my bio as well on my Instagram that kind of leads to all awesome. That they can also find there. If they just go to my Instagram, they can kind of find any past posts that I have on fertility, and then also it'll direct them to my website as well as that online course.
Excellent. Yeah, that's really helpful. And again, her Instagram, you can go to dr.patty, patty_Habe, Haebe. And check out her Instagram. It is very well done. So good job there. Patty's website is ocotillointegrative.com. So OCOTILLO integrative.com. So you can check out her website there. And again, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your knowledge and wisdom with everybody. And congratulations on, you know, your first child. You mentioned it's going to be a boy. So
it's going to be a boy. He'll be an Apollo Health fan for sure.
Yeah. I hope so. Well, he doesn't have to be, but that's great. Excellent. Great. Well, again, yeah, thanks so much. And everybody, thanks for listening to this. Please share with friends and family. And we're keeping the podcast ad-free. So the more you can share, the more we can keep giving. Take care. Awesome.
Now here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.